Hello and welcome to episode 73 of Tabletop Game Talk, a show where we talk about tabletop games of all types. I'm one of your hosts, Josh.
I'm Chris.
And I'm Kitty.
Today we're talking about analysis paralysis, or AP as it's known in the biz. It's a serious problem for some games, and even more serious for the gamers that have to play with them. Jeez, Chris really will say anything to bash his co-hosts. First, a thank you to our Patreon friends of the show. Yeah, you'd be quiet. Emil Jiljam, George Gia, and Adam Harrison. Also a huge thank you to all of our other patrons as well.
Thank you, Josh.
Anytime.
Did you pre-read that?
I did pre-read that. Basically, Chris put in a different line that said, geez, I really will read anything Chris types into this intro. So naturally, I didn't say that.
That's fair. I was just checking, you know,
keep me on my toes. I like it.
Yep. So we literally just drove in from Wausau, Wisconsin, drove for about 5 hours straight to Kitty's place so that we could record and drop an episode on Tuesday as planned. And that's because I'm going to fly to Dallas on Monday night. So this is our only chance.
Yes.
But because we are dedicated to you, the listener,
we
take this thing seriously. Mostly. So Evercon, we should talk a little bit about it.
We should. It was great.
Yeah, I want to hear about it.
Yeah, we had a fantastic time. Very small con. My first time at a small con. It was, really cool time.
Yep. It was about the size of, I would say, a big hotel ballroom. There was table sections for role-playing games, for board games. There was some open play. They had a silent auction. They had a dealer's room, which is actually pretty decent for the size of the con.
Yeah.
Concessions. They had a cool retro video game room.
Oh, that was nice.
Yeah. So they had like all these old video game systems set up and like games playing in there. So I played a little bit of Metroid while I was there.
Even the old SNESs had like crust on them and they were like yellow and stuff. It's like, oh, yeah, these really are properly retro. They're not just like been kept in shrink wrap for ages.
Yeah. Brett from the Game Gaming and BS podcast, it's basically his con, so he was running around crazy the entire time. So that was cool. He would stop in, say hi every once in a while, take a picture, and then like be running off and have it to go do something else. But he put on a really good show. They also had the Last Hope LARP, which Sydney talked about at our Game Hole Con episode. So Sydney got in there and was doing another like they call them modules or adventures or modules or something like that. So they're like about 3 hours long and you go in and you kind of like, it's almost like a D&D adventure, but live action. So she was in chainmail and, you know, all playing the part. They gave her stuff and hitting things with swords.
Yeah, she had such a good time. She was so excited about it. And she said that they're fairly unique for being very like sort of a combat based LARPing kind of thing.
Yeah.
Obviously they do the role playing aspect as well, but that was an interesting thing. I didn't realize that LARPing was heavily on the role playing side versus combat and that this one was a bit more unique.
Yep. They do a good job at mixing it. So the name is escaping me, but there's a lot of like medieval reenactment type of things, which are, they fight with like blunted weapons and things like that. And so this is kind of a little bit of that. Their weapons are even more blunted, more foam than real weapons. But it's also very authentic garb. So they're dressed the part and they like stay in character, but they still have all the role playing stuff. And they do like the story elements between meeting up and then they get together and they can do little scenarios and stuff. They had a village set up here. So there's like four different village places you could go to and interact with. And it was really cool.
Yeah.
So that's the Last Hope LARP. Google it if it's something interesting. They mostly, as far as I understand, are mostly in the Midwest area. So like Wisconsin.
I think they're based out of southern Wisconsin.
Yeah. Yeah.
They said they're going to be at GaryCon. And I'm sure other ones as well.
Yep. Which I will be at GaryCon too as soon as I figure out the date. There's so many cons. I'm pretty sure it's in March. So I need to get up on that pretty quick. We played a few games. So this convention, we actually were able to sit down and play games with people. We played Blood Rage with Aaron and Sharon.
And this was like one of my first times teaching a game that was really that complicated. And I was really nervous as well. I was like, I've played it a few times, but I've never had to teach it to anyone because Chris always does that job and I'm always playing with you. But it went smoothly and Aaron and Sharon were really nice and really cool people to play with. So we had a good laugh and that game is amazing. So it was hard not to
have
a good time.
Game.
Yeah.
Yep. And I thought you did great because we had signed up a bunch of games, but we kind of put more on the schedule than the con could fill, which was turned out to be really, really good because then we were able to like concentrate and we played a 5-player game of Blood Rage. But I let Josh take over the lead. Like he had prepared to teach it. So I was there and he just taught the whole thing, and I think you did a really good job.
Thanks, man. So, we appreciate that.
Yeah, we're going to have you do more of that.
Oh, no.
Next time I might not be there, though.
Yeah.
I did a couple how to play D&D sessions, and this were like brand new people that had never played Dungeons & Dragons before. And the first one I had three like high school age kids. So this con is actually the offshoot of a gaming club. I think either from a middle school or high school, or maybe both, but it's like the Wausau Gaming Club. And the con used to be held at a school. And then this is the second year that it's been at the convention center there. So these guys had never played Dungeons & Dragons before. And they're like, you know, we don't have a lot of time. How long is this going to take? And I'm like, well, I can any amount of time you want. You know, maybe not more than an hour. And they're like, well, maybe 45 minutes. I'm like, sure, why not? So I threw them into an improv scenario, and at 45 minutes, actually at an hour, I said, okay, so it's been an hour. You guys said you had a time. They kind of look at each other. It's like, well, we might have a little bit more time.
Nice. So somebody else just got ditched. Yeah. Right?
And then today we did it again. There's only one person that came. So Sydney and Josh sat down, and you guys are like really, you got just as into the little scenario.
Oh, completely. I mean, I've only ever played these kind of games like a handful of times, like count them on one hand. So it was cool for me to do it. And I've known you for many years now. And I knew that you were, you know, Dungeon Master Chris in a way, because you've done role playing, you know, for a very, very long time. And I'd heard about your improvisational style and heard how good you were from other people. And I was like, kind of excited, and it was so cool to like see you do your style, and I was like, yes, I'm finally getting to see Chris's legendary improv style. So yeah, I enjoyed it.
Yep. Both of these I gave peeks behind the curtain after the fact, because they're completely separate. And you know, so the first one I started right from the beginning, like they'd never played before, so I showed them pre-made characters and kind of, you know, showed them what each one was and put them down in front of a dragon, and they started fighting. And then within maybe 5 or 10 minutes, one of the characters gets eaten by the dragon and dies on purpose. And all of a sudden they wake up in a fever dream, and they all look at each other. They've all had the same dream, and they're in the tavern. And then they start running around trying to figure out what's going on. One of them mentions something about a princess. So suddenly there's a dragon and a princess someplace. And I'm just kind of like, anything they say, just rolling with it. And then I told Sydney about this, and Josh too, but Josh didn't remember as much. So when they sat down at the table, I'm like, well, I can't even do anything remotely similar, but I did the whole starting in media res, they call it, where it's like you start with the action. I wanted to do that. So these guys are fighting this little cave monster thing, and the entire party gets killed. And then all of a sudden, they find that they're at a tavern table, and they're in the middle of dinner, and they're like, wait, what just happened? So, and it's a lot of fun to just kind of play with what they think is going to happen. And sometimes you, all right, that's what's the thing is. And sometimes like, oh, close, but no, this other thing is really there.
So. You're very confident at making up things on the fly and on the seat of your pants, so bravo.
I should do an entire episode on Improv DM where we basically play here and you guys just keep throwing stuff at me and I'll just keep going.
Yeah,
maybe we can get a
as long
chat.
As you don't use that voice.
This voice?
No, that voice is fine. You know the voice.
Oh, the noggin voice?
The noggin voice.
What's the noggin voice? I've not heard this.
It's the worst.
All right.
It is just the worst.
For a side chat.
For the side chat.
All right.
It is not the worst. It's the best. Most memorable NPC ever. Let's see. Our next convention is Capricorn. We'll be, well, at least I will be there February 15th through the 18th. And maybe, well, Kitty will have a baby. We'll see where how travelable the little nugget of newbornness is. Josh isn't sure. He might be flying in or out that weekend. But as we get closer, I'm sure we'll figure all these details out. Currently, I blame the baby. We have a contest going on. The contest is for Kingdom Death Monsters, or Kingdom Death Monster. I think it's singular. To enter, deadline is January 26th. Send us an email that says January contest. If you include a subject topic that kind of goes along with our other subject topics, so something I can fit in the subject line, go ahead and add a description to what you mean. I've had a few, I had one topic come in that with the description, I'm like, oh man, this is like two actually really good topics. So I emailed them back. I'm like, all right, I'm entering you for both of these topics because they're both really good. We have enough topics for the year, I think. But keep sending them in because you might bump other people off. It's a competition. If we use your show topic for this contest only, and you are in the U.S. and I have a shirt that fits you, I'm you know, I still have sizes available for you. I'll send you a t-shirt. I have to send out the t-shirt from the last one still. It's all packaged up. I just haven't dropped it in the mail. I'll make that happen. Anyway, that is Kingdom Death Monster. And one Kickstarter this week that's not a game.
Wow.
This week I backed the Dice Tower 2018 fundraiser. So every year Dice Tower is a network of podcasts. So the Dice Tower is a podcast that turned into a bunch of video channels. They do tons and tons of videos for that are reviews and, you know, game shows and actual plays and all kinds of things. I think they did like 2,300 videos last year, which is crazy. And they do a weekly podcast. I started listening to them probably 2.5 years ago. They're part of the inspiration for this podcast. So I'm like, yeah, I backed them. I backed them for the last couple of years because I've known they've existed for the last couple of years. You can really back any amount. I backed them at $50 because promo pack A has a whole bunch of promos for games that we like. So like when the Kickstarter closes, we'll get that. They have like dice towers and card stands and all kinds of things that you can back. So if you like board games, you should listen to the Dice Tower. If you don't like board games, and you're probably not listening to us.
I was going to say, what are you doing here?
And if you listen to the Dice Tower and get any of their reviews or news or anything, you should look at their Kickstarter and see if there's something in there that interests you. On that note, I think we have a lot of feedback.
We do. Let's get back some feedback about past episodes. And if you have feedback about this or any of our previous episodes, email us or go to our Board Game Geek forums, easily found at tabletopgametalk.com/BGG.
Yeah, so this one, this is actually kind of a bunch of input from the last episode because I posted the thread really, really late. And then I didn't get a chance to incorporate it into the last episode because we went long. So this is a lot of feedback from our favorites of 2017. And we're going to touch the highlights here. All of these, unless otherwise noted, are on our BGG group. So if you go to tabletopgametalk.com/BGG and go to episode 72 and input on episode 72, you can get more details on some of this stuff. But you guys take this away.
Yeah, well, Christopher, I believe Dong, says Cold Water Crown, The Captain is Dead, and Jump Drive are his picks.
Yeah, I have not played The Captain is Dead, and I really should. I don't know what Cold Water Crown, and I haven't played Jump Drive either.
I was going to say, I haven't played any of these.
Yeah, I know. I have a lot of games that I need to get after this.
Man, we just got like a huge list now. All right, from Caleb, we have Spirit Island, heavy co-op about protecting your island from invaders. It was probably my favorite, though I've only played solo. Ex Libris, organizing and alphabetizing your bookshelf, is a close second. And a tiny Kickstarter game called Take the Gold. Cat pirates and corgi officers try to get 4 coins. Was a blast with my group and comes out as a warm-up all the time now.
Yep, I haven't seen Spirit Island. Ex Libris is good. I'm going to have to gift it to Kitty at some point because it's going to be right up her alley.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And I do have Take the Gold, but it's just a little deck of cards I need to bring it by sometime.
So from Steve, he says, First Martians and Star Wars Rebellion, Rise of the Empire expansion.
Yep. So Rise of the Empire expansion is what was released in 2017. Steve, I don't know what you see in First Martians, but email me and let me know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Reach their own.
I mean, maybe he actually played the game and yeah. It gets fun because I don't think we ever actually played it. I just read the book.
I did play it. And then after I played it, I tried to teach you guys it. I'm just like, I'm just not excited enough to actually go through the effort of teaching you guys this.
Yeah, you really talked us out of it. You were like, this is why you really don't want to play this game that I've set up in front of you for us to play. And we were like, okay, you convinced us. We don't want to play it now.
Sorry, Steve. Email me, though. Tell me if it gets better.
All right. So these are from Josh S., Gloomhaven, Spirit Island, Anarchy, Side Reel Confluence, a real-time negotiation, trading, and engine-building game. Chaotic fun.
Yeah, I need to try this Side Reel Confluence. And I think it's Anachrony. It's some kind of it's a time travel game. It's yeah. I
read too quickly.
You did. I have this. I really want to play it. This will be probably like a catalyst to an episode on really heavy Euro style games.
So from Michael, 5 Seals or Magic. Setup is a nightmare, but the game is worth it. Plays well 2 to 5 with lots of varying strategy because each game can be adjusted using a different deck of spells. Wasteland, Express Delivery Services, and Dogs. Backed because they are animal lovers and kept because it's so much fun.
Yeah, I need to find Dogs.
All right, so from Christy, in no particular order, Sagrada, Fabled Fruit, Azul, Ex Libris, Raxxon, Bunny Kingdom, Magic Max, Codenames Duet, Circle the Wagons, and Yokohama.
This is why I like Christy. I think she plays more games than I do.
I know. She plays so many games.
And she points out a lot of good ones. Azul has come up a few times on top 2017 list, and I don't know anything about it. So I actually feel I need to go and take a look at it. Sangrada is kind of like a stained glass window making
dice
rolling
yeah.
game. Fabled Fruit, we've played. Raxxon, we obviously played. We gave that away. I've not heard
Christy
of Magic
Christy gifted
Max.
Us Raxxon.
Yes. Thank you, Christy. Bunny Kingdom, I haven't played that either. And then Yokohama, this one, again, is getting raved about, and
huge.
I've never played it.
Yeah.
So I got to...
You're a failure, Chris.
I really am.
So from Joe about Charterstone, he says, so glad to hear Charterstone in your podcast. I'm playing this with my 14-year-old son and 9-year-old daughter, and we have blazed through this game. We're on the last game of the campaign, and they are consistently asking me to play. I love unlocking and opening all these new mechanics and building. It's definitely been a highlight of the year.
So hopefully by the time Joe answers this question for me, Sydney and I will be through it. Although I don't think we will because I'm out of town this week. So Joe, I'm curious, when you're done playing the game, when you've played all 12 scenarios, will you and the kids still want to keep playing what's left of the game? And can you? Because again, I've only heard that you can. So I'm kind of curious about that. So let me know. And then I want to give a shout out to Christopher Anderson. He did a micro badge for us on BGG.
That was so cool that he went to the effort to do that. Yeah. That's really awesome.
So it's not released yet. Christopher, I'm going to get back to you. It says something that it's actually easier for me to get back to you on the podcast than it is to actually reply to your email. But I am going to do that. I like the badge. So in the near future, there might be a badge that you can get for us on BGG. All right, I think we
have a quick question this week. This is a question from one of our listeners that won't fill an entire show topic, but we think is interesting nonetheless. Today's question comes from Terrence about Tom Vassell's comment about minis in board games. Aren't most minis unnecessary? I played mini games like HeroClix where the base changes and has game stats on it. There are other games where the mini represents a particular character with certain abilities or weapons. So does Tom just like cool minis or big boards?
So I won't speak specifically for Tom, so let me tell you what Tom likes. So I don't think he has any issue against miniatures. And in fact, I think a lot of times he likes miniatures. But the question I think is interesting here aren't most minis unnecessary? And I would say... probably not. I think miniatures in board games are necessary for a very, very specific reason of tactile feel of the board game and table presence. I think we play board games because they look really cool and we like the feeling of immersing ourselves in that play field, and miniatures help do that. Now, I think Tom's comment about this is a Kickstarter because it has miniatures is when the miniatures don't add anything.
I think what he actually said was the quote was a miniature for the sake of a miniature.
Right.
Where it could be a meeple, but they have replaced them with minis.
Right.
Those ones do. There are a lot of games where they don't add anything. It's not a specific character. It does not have stats associated with it. It might as well be a blue peg.
Yep. I will say Massive Darkness, which we gave away and I like, and I bought every expansion through the Kickstarter. It has miniatures just for the sake of having miniatures. In that game, you draw a monster and then you have like the lead monster and then you have a certain number of minion monsters that come with them. And all of these are miniatures. The minions are just hit points. Until you hit all the minions, you can't hit the boss. So the boss might as well just have a bunch of hit points. You do not need those extra miniatures. The boss mini, though, I think you need because you want to have that feel that, oh, there's someone there I need to punch in the face. And I can see that visually. And I don't think a token really gives you that same feeling. You know, it doesn't pull out the same feeling. So
there's a lot of intangibles in games or in just in products and services in general. You know, we all think, oh, you know, like, you know, Prada is just, it's just a shirt like any other shirt. But actually intangibles and being like the artwork on this was amazing and beautiful and it made me want to play the game. You know, that does add real value in the minds of the people playing it.
Yep. So Terrence, this goes to the whole miniature games. You know, what makes a minis game? Just because a box has miniatures in it, it doesn't make it a minis game. But honestly, I can't tell you what a minis game. It's kind of like, you know, art. Well, there's other, a specific kind of art. I can't define it, but I know it when I see it. So everyone knows what a minis game is when you see it, but just because it's minis on a board doesn't necessarily, or guys on a board, girls on a board, things on a board,
monsters
on a board, doesn't necessarily make it a miniatures game. Yeah. So it's kind of a gut feeling. All right. Shall we get into the most awkward topic we're ever going to talk about?
Let's do it.
Actually, I will say the most awkward topic we've ever talked about to date. Suspense.
In this episode, we're talking about analysis paralysis. What causes it? Are there ways to minimize it? Should we be more patient with those that suffer from it? I'm ready to answer all those questions, so bring it, Chris and Kitty. Those that suffer from it. I mean, you're making it sound like I've got a debilitating illness.
Does it feel like an intervention yet?
I mean, it kind of felt like one last week, but I mean, it was more of a heated debate.
We should start with that.
We should, because that's what prompted the whole, topic was we played photosynthesis. Basically I took a long time on my turns as I usually do, and Chris would make a comment every single time I was taking my turn, and I probably was taking a long time. I didn't really notice it, but it really started to get on my nerves, and I kind of started to get, it was kind of the straw that broke the camel's back, because a lot of the times when we play that happens, and you know, you're like, oh, come on, you know, and make a joke or something. But it was like, it felt like it was every single turn. And I was just like, well, you know, don't play with me then.
To be fair, the time it says on the box to play photosynthesis is 45 minutes to 60 minutes.
Yeah.
It took us 2 hours and 15 minutes.
Hang on. Right. But this goes to the heart of it, right? Because, no. I've got a rebuttal.
There's two sides to it.
Yeah, because the fact is that for me, it was a brand new game. Now, I think one of you hadn't played it, or had you both played it?
I played a partial game at Gen Con.
Well, you'd played a partial game at Gen Con.
And have that was it.
Played it
and I had not played
you
it all.
You had not played at all. But you had read the rule book or not?
I was reading the rule book when you guys showed up, pretty much.
But yeah, I mean, a lot of the time, we are playing completely new games. Most of the time, Chris has read through the rule book. Sometimes Kitty's played it as well, but not always. In fact, most of the time you haven't. But there are a number of occasions where you might have both played it and I haven't. It's not always the norm. But normally Chris has played it or has read the rule book through. And I think having a new game every time, and quite a few people said this in the threads, it can add to that, right? Because if you're unfamiliar with the rules and it takes you a while to get your heads around it, then part of your figuring things out is figuring out the rules and figuring out the strategy as you go, because you're just not as familiar with what's going on.
Right. So I do want to be just slightly defensive, but also to emphasize a point as well, because you felt like I was, like, every single turn, I was trying to hurry you.
Right. It felt like it,
Which wasn't really the case. It wasn't until probably hour 15 or so before I started doing it, just to try to encourage you to be quicker. But
I'll give you half an hour.
That's not.
Yeah, I want to say it was my second turn. I want to say it was like my second turn that you said something. But I mean,
the point I'm trying to make is perception. So honestly, unless we were recording this game, we don't know how long Josh was taking.
Yeah.
We don't know how many times I was going there, because the perception is very different.
Yeah.
I had the perception that your turns were taking an enormous amount of time.
Yeah.
So you would take a really long time, and then I would go, Kitty would go, and then it was back to you.
Yeah.
Where it would take a really long time, and then I would go, and then Kitty would go, and then it would back to you. So, and then you must have felt, as you were focusing in there, that, you know, Chris, every time it's my turn, you just want to hurry me along. I'm not doing that to you guys. Yeah. Why are you doing that to me?
Right. Yeah, no, absolutely. And, you know, I did take it very personally. Like, you know, I remember kind of cussing at you and stuff, which I did then go on to say to Chris. I was like, that's a sign that we're really good friends, because I can't get angry at every single friend I have. Like, there's only a very few select people I can get angry at. So that's how I know I'm very good friends with you. But yeah, I took it really personally. And I think you can do that in these games, because it's a natural style of play for me. And one of the things I said when we were having this heated debate was, I enjoy especially in a game like this that was very abstract and had a lot of strategy to it, I enjoy gaming it out, and I enjoy the act of thinking the strategy through. And so if if I've got to hurry through it or just make a quick decision, then I will get frustrated later because I will see, oh, I just made a quick snap decision because I didn't think it through and I'm behind now. And added to the competitiveness, another thing that was mentioned in the threads, if you're a competitive person, that amps up the AP as well because you want to win and that's why you're taking longer, is to kind of game through those things. That's also part of the enjoyment for me. If I feel like I've lost a game, and normally in new games, I often will lose the game because I just don't know the rules as well. And it's, you know, it's harder to get a grasp on things and play better than people who are a little bit more informed. Then I feel like I've hampered myself by not taking enough time. Again, I totally understand from your point of view as well, because you were left waiting there for a long time.
Yeah. So, to be clear, what we were basically what brought up the discussion is, as a podcast, we want to be able to play as many games together as we can. And so we sometimes, like Kitty and I, may not take a game as seriously because we just want to get through it just to kind of feel it. But we weren't all on the same page at the beginning of that game. That's not what, like, we didn't spell it out ahead of time. It's like, okay, we're going to try to get through two games before we record. It was, okay, this game took much longer than we thought. Now we won't be able to get to this other game, and we still have to record. And that's kind of what sparked the conversation. And it really kind of... I didn't want to change the episode topic at that time because we were still fairly heated at the time.
We were.
So, it would have been a mess.
Yeah. So we all agreed, it's like, let's give it a week and come back and revisit this. Because you said a few things that kind of changed my way of thinking about how you approach games. Like, my MO is, when I first play a game, I don't even try to win. Yep. I try to take the fastest turn I can, simply because I'm trying to see all the mechanics, how things work, maybe get to end game scoring. But that's a personal goal in my mind. It's not something that I broadcast to everybody, that I'm just going to do that. Where you was like, oh, I'm probably not going to play this game again, and I want to play it as optimally as I can. And the part where you said, I enjoy that thinking, like, that's the part of the game that I enjoy, I'm like, well, that's really not fair to ask someone to not enjoy themselves.
And that's the kind of bit that I started to really get to in our heated discussion. It was kind of like, I don't know if I'm going to enjoy playing games with you, because we always play new games, and if I have to feel like I'm rushing through it all the time, am I even going to enjoy the experience of playing games with you? And then it's like, that's kind of not great, because that's the whole point, that we meet up and play games. Now, sometimes we do just want to try out a game to talk about it on the podcast. And I guess with this one, I didn't realize that's what we were doing. I just thought we were playing a game together. And so that obviously fed into the discrepancy between us, because there have certainly been times we play games together and I haven't tried to win as hard as I did in that one, because of what you said. Like, you know, it's just, we're just trying it out, whatever. But the problem is, often, even if we're just trying a game out to see the mechanics, we're playing a new game all the time. It's rare that we're playing a game that we've played before together, and so it's going to be rare that I get to scratch that itch.
I think what really got you with this one too is you were really, really enjoying the game.
Oh, I loved it.
It was exactly your style of game.
Yeah.
If it's not your style of game, I can see, like, there's like, you know, three turns in, you start taking faster and faster turns.
Yeah.
And if you're really liking a game, three turns in, you start taking slower and slower turns.
Yeah.
So it's definitely a game style, and photosynthesis really, like, tapped that for you, because there's seriously, like, everything is in front of you. You've got all the information.
No randomness.
Yep.
You get to make all of the choices, and you can see out, and you know where things are going. You can see, like, four turns in advance what's going to happen. So
there's a lot of squares on that board as well. I mean, there's so many factors that go into making that game. And that was something that someone mentioned in the threads. You know, games that have that high level of both abstractness, like you mentioned, but also then multiple different layers of abstraction and kind of branching of a decision tree, means that there is so much there in that particular game to ponder. So you at the end were like, it's my fault. I picked this game. I should have known Josh was going to do this. And, you know, I felt bad as well. I did genuinely feel bad. I wasn't just, like, defending myself. There was a point where I was like, I get it. You know, it kind of does feel terrible for you guys when I'm just, and I didn't realize how long each turn was taking, because I was totally in my head kind of turning that.
Oh, yeah, you were totally, like, not even noticing that, like, me and Chris are, like, Instagramming and tweeting and typing show notes.
At one point, I did joke that Kitty and I could set up the other game and play that while Josh was playing Photosynthesis. And it was a joke, but I think in retrospect, we probably could have
actually
done that.
It's actually not a bad suggestion for times where you'd want to play with someone who is very different to the other two in that respect.
Yeah. Well, I did that at EverCon. So Sydney is a little bit analysis paralysis as well, and because she wants to win.
Let's call them move optimizers.
Move optimizers. Yeah. I like that
analysis
one.
Paralysis sounds a little bit mean-spirited sometimes.
Yeah, exactly. It's actually not that I'm paralyzed and I can't make a decision. I think that's where you're analyzing.
You can't commit to a decision without making sure it is the best decision you can make at the time.
Right. And even in it's even like, I don't know. It just even seems like, of course, you would take into account all of the variables, which in that game was very numerous. But yeah.
Yeah. Well, what I did is I set up two-player games, one with Josh, one with Sydney, and I just played them both at the same time.
Hey. The game was Homeworlds. Well, it was like chess. Sure. Of course, you're going to mull them over.
Sure. Right. And well, two things to note. Josh destroyed us in Photosynthesis.
He did.
He also beat me at Homeworlds.
Well, to be fair, I hadn't played the game in a long time, and you were kind of pulling your punches a little bit.
I wasn't. Really? I would love for you to think I was.
I genuinely thought you were pulling your punches.
Two things happened in Homeworlds that caught me off guard. Number one, you created a system that was the same as mine, so it was a closed system.
Yeah.
And you had red as your attack. So if you want to know how to play Homeworlds, Looney Labs, Homeworlds, we won't get into it here, but it's kind of like space chess. But so that was the first thing you did, is you set up an abnormal board situation that I didn't notice right away.
Right.
The second thing is I thought I had beat you. Like, when I moved my ships in, I'm like, okay, I got this. And then I noticed, oh, there's a move where he can reverse this on me and then he can win.
And it took me a while to see it.
And spent that time.
If you had moved quickly, you might have lost.
Yep. Yeah. I could have... Yeah, in any normal...
If Chris had taken his time, he might not have made that move.
I was about to say any normal player, but I would say any other player that's playing quickly, they may have just looked at... Because you looked at it and said, oh, I've lost. And then, but you kept looking at the situation. It's like, wait a minute.
I wanted to make sure. And the funny thing is like, you were really kind of excited to play Andy Looney, the creator of the game, because he gives away medals if people beat him, because he's so damn good at this game. Mm-hmm. Like, this is his game. And you guys have played him at cons a few times. And Sydney is also very into this game, but thinks and ponders on moves, like me, a lot longer than you. And she's a bit better than you at this game. And she did actually achieve your dream of beating Andy Looney and getting the medal.
I played him twice and got destroyed twice. She played him twice and the second game beat him.
Yep. Yeah. And he doesn't give those out very often. Like, no,
I think he said that was the 15. Yeah.
She's number 15.
That's crazy. Yeah. Yep. That's a real achievement.
Yep. So what I want to get back to, like, what you enjoy about the game.
Right.
Because since you said that, I have been thinking, because we actually had a couple solutions, right, for how do we play games so that we can experience more games as a group, but also play games that you are going to enjoy and have fun with.
Sure.
And your recommendation was, well, if we weren't scoring the game, then I wouldn't be overly invested in it.
It absolutely would destroy the AP. I wouldn't have it anymore. Like, if there was no scoring and no one would win at the end of the game, I would take lightning turns and we would discover the game without trying to play to win.
Yeah. Now, I don't recommend this for a typical gaming group where it's like, okay, we have an AP player, so we're just never going to score a game. But for us, it's not a bad solution.
Because we're not really playing games for, you know, who's going to win. Like, we play, sometimes we do that and we still love it. And, you know, we're going to pick maybe different games with Josh. But most of what we're doing is we're trying to explore. Right. And you can get a feel for a game without necessarily playing even the whole game.
Yeah. And that's what I say. For a game that we play, like, the first time through, where we're just trying to get a feel for the game, pick a stopping point. You know,
set a 30-minute timer or something.
Yep, exactly. So once we learn the rules and we start, we'll play for 30 minutes. And then if we really want to play the game for a competitive game, we'll all be in that competitive mindset. We will be ready to take those turns that are, I want to destroy you guys.
Because some of the part that frustrated me was I did not go in analyzing nearly as much. I made a terrible first move. Chris let me undo it. And then I just kind of, like, played for fun, and I wasn't, you know, and so I was definitely not on nearly the same page, possibly not in the same book as right. you were for this That's one. So true. I was just like, oh, let's play, you know.
But that was partly our fault.
Yeah.
You know,
and it's setting up the expectation at the beginning of the game.
Yep. And I'm glad that we actually had the conversation afterwards because
me too.
You know, Josh actually did really get upset, and that wasn't my intent. I was more jabbing than anything else, you know, just kind of like poking fun. And you took it more seriously than I was intending.
Right.
And then the conversation tempo, the tone just changed quite a bit. Yeah. And I'm like, oh. And then you started explaining things in ways where I could see from your point of view. So now I want to say, okay, when I want to play a competitive game, just be right up front. Let's do this. We're all in.
Right.
And I'm much more, actually, with a two-player game, I don't actually have a problem waiting. I am sensitive. It goes back to the D&D thing where my goal as a dungeon master is to make sure everyone at the table is having fun.
Yeah.
And if I see that people are bored or on their phones or something like that, I know that someone's not having fun. So I feel like I need to change the situation so that everyone's kind of equal.
And it's funny that you say that because when we were at the con and I was teaching Blood Rage, a game which I probably would take a long time normally over turns, I'm definitely the same way. Like, it's not like I have no empathy. And once I realized I'd kind of upset you guys, I was like, oh no, while still trying to defend myself. But when we were at the con playing Blood Rage, because we had two new people and we were teaching them the game, they'd never played it before, I made the decision instantly. I was like, I'm not playing this to win at all. Like, I'm just going to take quick turns, like lightning fast turns. And that's exactly what I did the whole game. And that definitely, I had fun still playing the game. But I think I can be myself around you two much more. And that's why I kind of just slip into that more often. And always, I'm going to want to play some games and enjoy them to the level that I like to play them and do that kind of overthinking sometimes.
Yeah. Well, in photosynthesis, one of the other things too is I think Kitty and I knew for the last probably half hour, 45 minutes that there was no way we could win.
Yeah. I said to you guys, I'm really sorry about that because if I had known that, I would have immediately sped up. Like if I had realized there was no way that you could have caught me, I would have been like taking quicker turns. I was just so engrossed in continually maximizing that. I didn't see it. I didn't see that I'd already won. Like,
well, and that's the thing. It's like, I'm guilty of this too, because I didn't see how much fun you were having.
Right.
Like, all I could do is like see how much time you were taking, but it didn't register as, oh, he's really enjoying this.
Right.
Like, this is what he wants to do.
Yeah.
So one of the things I think we'll have to do going forward is we're playing this game just to experiment with the rules, and this has to happen equally as often. All right, we're playing this game to win. And this will be games that we all know the rules to. We've always all played at least once before, so we can all feel like, you know, we are in this together and in it to win it and are on the same page.
Right.
And willing to take the time. So you guys have been perusing the BGG thread.
I was just about to bring this up. So Christy and David both talked about this article by Andrew, which is great, and I recommend that everyone goes to the Board Game Geek thread. Christy posted the link here.
I wouldn't describe it as great. I'm glad.
It's really funny.
It is funny, but if you're someone that suffers from AP, I was 50% laughing and 50% like, oh, this is really snarky. And pushing my buttons a bit right now. And I know it was all good fun, Christy. I'm glad you posted it. But I have mixed feelings about that.
All right, maybe we should elaborate.
25 stages of analysis paralysis in which we go through. Let me pull up the tab here.
There was one about like fantasizing as well. Like, there's all sorts
it starts
of
with
funny.
Acceptance. You need to come to terms with the fact that you make games less fun to play. Denial, more denial, confront the evidence. Enthusiasm, consider your options. There is a paragraph explanation for each of these stages that's very fun. You go
Wait
through
a minute.
6
Enthusiasm
through 13.
Is, maybe you can achieve the dream too. Surely there's an ideal way to play games that will make everyone happy.
So then you go steps 6 through 13, and then steps 14 is consider steps 6 through 13 again.
How dare you?
But it does come to some, you know, like reconciliation is realizing, you know, like you have to find the right group and you have to find the right kind of game and you all have to be on the same page about how much time you're spending.
Yeah, I think it was a perfect storm with our situation last week. Like, you know, I'm happy to move a bit faster. Like, it's not that I wasn't saying I will never move faster because otherwise I'll never enjoy it. It was just like it's trying to find that happy medium. And this was the perfect storm of new game, very abstract, with lots of possibilities, wanting to win. You know, and some people have even said things like game length. You know, like with a shorter game, you can kind of be like, well, you know, it's only half an hour, 20 minutes. I don't need to.
I feel like this one was like just that perfect length in between a short game and a long game.
Yep.
Where like me and Chris were like, oh, this isn't going to be a very long game. So we were like not in it, but you were like, oh, it's a long enough game that I want to put my attention into it. Yeah. And it was just, we were not.
Yeah. And I honestly synced. I think that was true because we came in completely different sides.
Oh, yeah.
We thought this was almost filler sized game.
Right.
Yeah.
Now, Photosynthesis, if you haven't played it, it's a very, very heady game. It's very simple. There's basically three things you can do, and you're essentially trying to maximize your tree harvesting in the forest. But as the sun rotates around the board, your trees can block other people's trees, and they can block your own trees. And what you really want to do is get trees that get as much sun as possible, because that gives you more action points or solar points or sun points that you can plant more seeds with and grow your trees with. And as you go around, you know, you get bigger and bigger. You know, Kitty and I at the beginning, it's like, okay, you know, we're placing our place really nilly. And Josh, at the very beginning, he started thinking, he's like, huh, this. And by turn, I don't know, because you go three revolutions around and each one has six turns in it. By the second revolution, you had like 12 trees out there and I had three. I think Kitty had four.
You were getting twice as much, twice as many points as we were on each revolution. Like, it was just... Yeah.
Yeah, we got to Josh. Josh, you get 16 points, and I get 2.
Yep.
Yeah, that did happen.
Actually
yeah.
happened. Yep. Yeah.
So it was just kind of a really disconnect going in.
It was the perfect storm.
So, all right, what do we do about this? How do we play? All right, so we know how to play with Josh, because Josh and, like, we are all really good friends.
Yes.
And we got past it. We know ways to approach it for our group where we can say partial games and stuff like that. But I think there's multiple ways why people may have what we term AP. I wrote a few of these down. You want to optimize your moves. So that's basically you. You said you hate regretting the fact that you could have made a better move if only you'd taken more time to consider.
Yeah, especially if in a game like Photosynthesis, your actions will then... kind of be negative or positive for many rounds onwards. It's kind of the compound effect. Like, the longer it goes on, the worse that your decision was early on to make that bad move.
The other thing you said is you love the puzzle of it. Like, you enjoy the puzzle of it.
Absolutely, yeah.
So between those two things, you want to optimize it, you enjoy the puzzle. Is there anything you could do that would still make the game something you enjoy, but you think you could speed it up? Is there anything in your mind? And the answer may be no.
Yeah, I mean, I think we've talked about a lot of them. Like, you know, to be honest, it's hard for me to say. Like, I think I can speed up with things like timers or, you know, picking the right game. Or maybe we even talked about maybe just doing your homework beforehand. Like, that might be a good one. Like, if we're going to sit down and play a game, hey, Josh, we're playing Photosynthesis, and I'll go and look online at the rules, see how it all works, because that was a lot of the time as well, was just getting, and almost always is with our game group, we're playing something new that I've never seen before. So I think for those people, looking up those reviews, how to plays beforehand will really help them get through it quicker.
So, and this can't work for all games. Sorry, I interrupted you, Kitty.
That's fine. So I thought also, what could I do? I could have slowed down my turns. I did not think through a lot of strategy. I, you know, like, it's not just about, like, what can the AP player do?
You know, that's interesting, because actually that would have really helped. Because of the difference between how you two were playing and how I was playing, your turns were so short. Half of my thinking would have been eaten up with half of your thinking.
When I was taking my turn.
Right.
And if I was taking my turn also, to optimize my move, I wouldn't have felt maybe as much like I was out of the game as early as I did.
Yeah.
I might have made better moves. I might have, you know, if I had taken my time, if I hadn't been playing on my phone,
yeah,
if I had been a little more focused, maybe we all could have come to a more medium-sized turn length.
Yeah.
That's a good point, because I actually, and I don't want to say spite sped my turn. But
you did.
But on the other side, too, I had so much time to think.
Well, yes. Because
the turn order was Kitty, Josh, myself.
Right.
And I had so much time to think during Josh's turn. Right.
Well,
I didn't really need time on my turn.
Yeah, that's true. And that's what gave you the opportunity to go bang, bang. And then it looks even worse. It's like, well, we just took our turn in 2 seconds. Maybe you wouldn't have done if I'd just gone bang like that and just thrown something out there. And that would have reset things a little. But once one person takes a bit longer, then the gap starts to widen between the two sides.
And I think a lot of times I was looking at the board during your turn and deciding what I was going to do.
Yeah.
And I didn't look at how your move and Chris's move changed the board, because
right.
I was like, oh, I already planned this out. I know how I want to spend my things. And turn order did change. It just always felt like it was that order because that's how
so
the
long.
Time went.
Yeah.
Well, the first player moved,
yeah.
But the turn order was the same.
Is the
yeah,
same.
I
That's
always
true.
Went after Josh, even though I may have gone first in the round.
Yeah.
Josh had gone last in the last round. Yeah, that's actually a really good point. Now, you mentioned a timer, and I know that we've talked about this before, where you put a timer on an AP player, say, okay, you have 1 minute to take your turn.
Mm.
And if you don't take it within 1 minute, then we take it for you, or you skip a turn, or whatever.
Well, you wouldn't put, for a start, I mean, I see multiple problems with it as well. For a start, you wouldn't put a timer on one person. Because
right.
then
put it on everyone.
You put it on
exactly.
everybody, right.
Yeah.
But then also, part of the problem with AP playing, like we spoke about already, is not knowing the game enough. So if one person just knows the game less, and that's part of it, that's a bit unfair too. So that's tricky as well. So, I mean, yeah, I'd be up for trying it, but then I can also see sort of certain situations where I feel like, oh, someone else knows the game more than me or something like that. And also it could be a situation where it just saps the fun, you know, like saying that I enjoy that turning in my head and feeling like I'm rushed. I'm like, well, this isn't even fun to play anymore. I, you know, put a timer on me. So I don't know. I need to try it out before yeah. I know.
I was actually thinking of, and I brought this up again, I think I started saying this doesn't work with all games, but a essentially kind of a hot potato, pass the puck type of thing. So you start a timer on the phone, and when you're done, you tap it and you pass it to the next person. And at the end of the game, it shows you the average turn length for each person. And then you have a weighted point average for the person who was the fastest. They get a bonus of some sort. The next fastest gets a bonus, and the slowest person gets no bonus. So there's some actual points associated with moving quicker. And if you're trying to optimize and win the game, maybe then you're taking a good turn so that you have that optimization at the end versus
sure.
the most optimal turn, which could give you the best at the time, but by the time you get to the end, maybe it changes things a little bit. If you had that kind of motivation with that, and I'm not suggesting doing this with anything, I'm just curious, how does that affect your way of like approaching the game if you knew that was an element?
I would definitely incorporate it. I would definitely try and get some points off of it. The issue we have is, one, the thing that we just mentioned.
Let's assume that we've all played the game at least once for any of these scenarios.
Sure. I think the longer someone takes with their turn, the more time the other people get to think. So that's a
but that's part
right
of the
there.
Meta. That's part of the meta, though. If you take a lot of time, you're actually giving benefit to the other
sure.
players, so it encourages you to even go faster.
Yeah. But the other thing is, I wonder if with AP players, I don't know if this is a valid argument, but it could just be that you guys are smarter than me. Like, you might, and maybe that's not it, but you might just be able to work out the mechanics of the game and take moves quicker than me in most games. And it's just the fact that I just need a little bit more time to make the same kind of moves that you do. I don't know. In that scenario, then that would, if you had that situation in your group, that would be really tricky to then put the timer on. I think it would, I'm keen to try it.
Well,
I think we should give it a go.
So I don't think, I mean, I may or may not be smarter than you, let's be honest. But I don't think that I look at the game board in a completely different way than you do.
Yeah.
When you were looking at that board, you were trying to optimize, if I go here, the sun's going to go here, that's going to block here. So no, I'm going to go here and that's going to block that. And the next turn is going to be there and I'm going to get that and that. So that, so you were actually planning your moves ahead.
Right.
When I was looking at that board, I'm like, oh, I can grow a seed there and I have 2 points left and I'll grow that tree.
Right.
Like I was never looking ahead.
Right.
So in that scenario, you were being the smart, being the smarter player.
Yeah.
Because you were looking ahead and planning out and it paid off.
Right.
When I take a fast turn, it's not because I've already figured those things out.
Yeah.
It's simply because I am looking at a limited environment and I'm only worried about that environment. And I'm not worried about what's coming in the future, which for some games is not good. But I think that's the difference. So it's not that I'm figuring out what you're figuring out faster.
Yeah,
if I would have been much closer in the competition.
I don't think it was the case in that game, but I think it could be the case for some gaming groups and for some games where someone, maybe they're not even smarter. Maybe they, again, like they just know the game better. And so it's a tricky one, but I get what you're saying. It's, I don't know, there are problems with it, but I would be keen to try it and see what happens. So we'll have to experiment with it at some point.
All right.
So here's the thing I think that we've already done that none of us have really paid very much attention to. We mostly play co-op games.
Yeah.
Huh.
It really does seem to minimize the analysis paralysis, part because we all talk through together every move.
Yep.
That's part of it. Like, yes, the one player gets to make the move, but games that we played like Pandemic Legacy, Pandemic Legacy Season 2, Time Stories, I'm trying to think of other ones recently that we've really enjoyed. A lot of them have been co-op games where we are talking through what is best together and making a decision kind of as a team.
Yeah. I used to, so when Sydney and I were first learning Homeworlds, we would challenge each other's moves. Every single move the other person made, if we didn't think that was the optimal move, we would essentially ask a question, why did you do that versus doing this? By doing that, like, we really pushed each other to the maximum. Because now it's like, we're working together, but we both have different interests. So I don't want her to take a suboptimal move. I want her to take the best possible move. Because if I beat her, I want to beat her the hardest opponent I can play.
Yeah.
And so when we were doing that, we were both invested in every single turn. So even if she took a long time, I was taking a long time too, and she was interested in what I was doing, and I was interested in what she was doing. Now, I don't think this works like perfectly. Like if you're playing a three-person photosynthesis game and every single time Kitty does something, it's like, Kitty, why did you do that? Because I don't think that's your optimal move. Right. Justify everything you're doing.
I mean, if we're trying to be like tournament level photosynthesis players, if we are going out into the world to play photosynthesis with others, then that is the best way to play the game.
To be fair, I feel like this is just Chris trying to take 50% of the credit for Sydney's medal for being Andy Lenny. I'm just saying, I trained her to be the best, okay?
Well, what I was...
But she's the one who takes the time.
She does.
That's true.
She does.
Yep.
She's the million-dollar baby and you're the Clint Eastwood.
In that game, and just to kind of, you know, again, defend myself a little bit.
No, I'm joking. I'm absolutely joking.
But no, that was the whole point, though. I was attempting to train her to be the best opponent I could play against so that I could beat Andy.
Yeah.
I mean, it backfired. Now she beats me more often than not because she's better at it than I am.
Right.
But that's how we were teaching each other to play.
Right.
And like really that challenge. And when we first played Andy Looney, she and I played together. And every time we made a move, we would challenge each other as to should we do that or should we not. And there was a move at the end of that game where I'm just like, oh, I have this. And I made a quick move. And she's like, what are you doing? And I had already slided the piece over saying, yep, this is my turn. Andy comes back, boom, totally destroys what I think is the winning move. And then, she was mad.
Yeah.
And then I'm looking at the board and I'm like, oh, wait, no, I can do this move and there's no way out of it. And she's looking at it and she's like, she's still angry because, again, that making a suboptimal move by rushing it for the same reason that you're mad at yourself if you make a suboptimal move because you had to be rushed.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's definitely part of the equation.
I think it works best, though, in one-on-one games.
Yeah.
Playing that style, three-player doesn't work quite as well.
Yeah. But it is sort of what we do when we do the co-op games because we're all discussing and working it out.
Yeah. And I think with the co-op games as well, it allows me to kind of go in my own little space and like do a lot of thinking, and then sometimes come up with a novel thing that no one else has thought of, because it allows me that time. I could, a whole turn could go by and maybe I don't contribute because I'm already on this one train of thought of something we could do that's quite complicated, and then I come out and go like, hey, I've thought of this, we could do this, this, and this, and this. Oh, that's a really good idea. So sometimes it's really a boon in co-op games to have people like that, because they're going to find solutions that you didn't even think of because they take the time to really game it out.
Yeah. So you learn to use your AP player.
Oh, yeah.
That's important. And I think, so just to kind of circle this back to what can we do with a generic AP player and not just Josh, I think, honestly, being on the same playing field when you go into the game. Like, AP players tend to know their AP. They'll admit it themselves. Like, oh yeah, I take a little bit of extra time. Aaron in the Blood Rage game, you know, this was his first game he ever played, and he was taking a little bit of extra time to make that move, and he admitted, it's like, oh yeah, I'm a little bit AP. He didn't take any excessive amount of time, but you could tell he wanted to think more. And if he had, because he came in dead last, it was his first game. And
I felt really bad about that as well. I was like, oh, wow, we accidentally sort of crushed them in this game.
Yeah. And it wasn't intentional.
Blood Rage is like that, though.
Yeah. But it's like, one of those games.
That happened at GameholeCon, too, yep. Where oh. I wasn't playing, but I was I was teaching and watching a game. And somebody just got like, when you start adding up those points at the end, and like they didn't notice like, oh, everyone else picked up like these extra points here and there, like you can really just get destroyed.
Yeah, well, you can, that's very true.
Yeah, your first game there, you have to play once to understand the rules. And by the end, he's like, oh, now I get it. If I was starting over, I would understand it.
Yeah.
But like I say, AP players tend to know. Talk about it before you start playing the game. Say, are we going to be ultra competitive, or are we playing this a little bit more fast and casual where we're not going to be that competitive player? Mm-hmm. If the AP player says, no, I always play competitively, I always want to win, I don't care if it's fun for you or not, I'm going to take 20 minutes on my turn, and if you don't like it, don't play with
we're
me.
We're all that stubborn, terrible people.
No.
No,
I'm saying what they say, right, because that is the only way they enjoy a game, simply say, okay, well, maybe we can find a game that we can all enjoy.
Right.
You know, there's plenty of games out there. Otherwise, if they say, yeah, I'll take faster turns here because I can be a little bit more casual about it, I don't have a problem doing that. But you all know going in what the expectations are. Because I think our natural reactions are to kind of like, you know, tongue in cheek or talk about an AP player when they're not there. Like, oh, we got to play with Josh again. It's going to take forever. I don't think that's fair. I think that...
It did. I mean, essentially, what led to the incident was the sort of long buildup of resentment over time. Like, I was fine with the jokes for a long time, but it just needled me a little bit every time it was done over a long, long period of us playing games. And then eventually you end up snapping. Like, right. I did. And yeah.
Yeah. So I think it's fair. It's not fair to just assume that they're going to get faster and it's their problem. I think it's a matter of just let's make sure that we're all playing the same game at the same level. And if everyone agrees, then Kitty and I have no right to complain when you're, you know, trying to win the game, because we've all agreed we're playing this game to win. If we're playing it for discovery purposes, maybe we put a timer on there. We don't even get to the end because we're just trying to discover the rules.
Sure.
Also, if you have a friend who's AP, ask them, what are you thinking about? Is it really that you just kind of going back and forth between two turns? Are you advancing things? Is it even fun for you to stare at the board for 20 minutes? 20 minutes exaggeration. 10 was the longest turn you took. But
again, he didn't have a timer. He's just pulling a number.
I had a phone. But it's important to ask that question, because honestly, it'll kind of give you an enlightened view of what they're thinking about and how they're thinking about something different than what you're thinking about.
Yes.
And maybe that's why you have a second game or a phone.
So Chris Anderson on BGG broke it down into like three really good kind of factors. And his were familiarity with the game, the length of the game, and the desire to win. And balancing those three things, you can kind of find a happy medium. So I'd recommend going and reading through some of his explanation there, because I think he did a really good job breaking down.
There were some really good comments in there.
Oh, yeah. There were a ton.
Yeah, but his was particularly good.
Check out the thread.
Yeah, and these are really good, honestly. So Christopher Dung sent this one. His was a little bit snarky.
I purposely left that one out.
Steve, Chris Anderson, Christy, there's a lot of Chris's here. Terrence and David, all great feedback. Like, we knew that this topic was going to get a little bit more, because it was. This is a very personal topic, yeah, and it's absolutely. It's not the easiest one to talk about with a gaming group.
It can right. really feel personal yep. yeah. on both sides of it, I think, because I do feel like at some point Josh was like, well, you know, and like turned it back on us. right. And, you know, it's fair because, you know, it takes two to tango. It takes more than one person to make the situation. So
yep. yeah. And Kitty recommended a topic for one of our future ones, which we're definitely going to do, and that's how to not get so emotionally involved in our games.
Yes.
I'm looking forward to that. I can use a bit of that, I think.
Yep.
I think we all can.
It is a great topic. Like, you know, I think, Kitty, you'll admit that's one of your bigger things is you get upset when you want to do a strategy and somebody tries to, you know, stop that strategy. Anytime something's going against you, like any Take That or something like that.
Oh, yeah. And this was
Take That games.
Yeah.
It was photosynthesis was a little bit like that because you had to block other people and that was part of the game. And so I was blocking you guys big time.
So much.
Like, really, really turning the screw there. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It won't be next episode, but it'll probably be very soon because I think it's a really good topic to talk about.
Yeah, and it'll be great when I'm sleep deprived with perfect. A newborn. Yeah, that'll be perfect.
Oh, yes. This will be your first episode back from after having the baby. So
sometime in February then.
Yeah. All right. I think we've talked about this topic enough. you made it.
I made it. We're Josh, all still friends.
I do want to say I appreciate you talking about this, like yeah. more than anything, because like I say, it's an awkward thing.
Yeah.
And it could, like, I hope you don't feel attacked.
No. I mean, I did in that incident, but but it was that you weren't trying to do that. It just felt like it. And it's good for me too. It's good for me to think about the other side of it too. Like I said, I go into a headspace where time disappears. I've missed train stops because I've been playing a game on my phone that I was so absorbed in. And I was like, how have I been on this train for half an hour? It feels like 2 minutes.
Yep.
So... I get it from your side, too.
Yep, not knowing the passages of time. Well, if you want to follow us on Facebook, we're at Tabletop Game Talk Podcast. If you want to follow us on Twitter, we're at Tabletop Game TLK. There's a cool picture of us at Evercon up there right now. You can follow me at Game Master Chris. We love iTunes reviews, and I check them periodically, and I will say your name. Well, at least your iTunes name. And thank you and appreciate you immensely. If you want to be more monetarily supportive so that I can keep giving away games and hosting stuff, you can check out our Patreon page at tabletopgametalk.com/Patreon. That's Patreon. And for the rest of this stuff, Josh is going to talk.
Indeed. Well, thanks for listening. And remember, we love your feedback. So email us with comments or questions at tabletopgametalk@gmail.com. Finally, a huge thank you to our Patreons. Emil Jill Jam, George, Adam Harrison, Sam from New York, Jason Strong, Terence Miltner, Stephen Seitz, Michael Ohl, Trevor Olson, Brian Arnold, Sean P. Kelly, Daniel Shepard, C. Marie, Rudy Liu, Benjamin Heimowitz, Jerry Huang, Mike Smith, Stefan, I'll Make You a Man, Blonde Hair and a Tan, Phillips, Caleb O'Brien, John Lewis, Jennifer Engelbrecht, Justin Willard, Christopher Dong, Jason Marks, Jeremy Fisher, Carl Hammond, David Radke, Lance Morgan, Nick Quickstra, David Sellers, Jason Rodney, Michael Yanikowski, Miles Clark, Cindy Lum, Phil Swartzwell, and Jordan Livingston. Until next week, when we talk about no more buying games, keep playing games and having fun.
Yeah, so next week is an intervention for me.
Oh, thank God. It's about time.
We're not singling anyone out.
No. Yeah, I think we can really help you, Chris.
I doubt
it. I'm not sure.
No.